introduce William Owens to the stage to talk about concerns about professional war games. Over to you, William.
Thank you.
Right, I often have to preface most of times I talk to either professional, military, or in fact any audiences with, I'm probably going to upset you. I'm warning you, I'm not apologising, okay? So, here we go. This I'm saying is a red, when I was asked about the COTS-MOTS thing, I've used a lot of COTS-MOTS war games myself, mainly desktop, sometimes manual, to do support one for fun, as going all the way back to playing Micro Armor when I was a teenager, Dungeons and Dragons, but I've also used it to support work that's actually been fed into real army projects, and as a red teamer I've worked on a wide variety of subjects, and when I say I'm not worried about upsetting people, I've upset numerous divisional staffs and two stars, because when you turn around and tell them the plan isn't going to work and you think it's rubbish, and they realise they're being talked to by a former Lance Corporal, it gets emotional, put it that way. So, red teamer, I'm perfectly used to representing the contrarian view, as it were. I also think, by the way, red teaming is a term that's widely abused and misrepresented, and red teaming has just become another bumper sticker. It doesn't really mean anything. Anyone can take whatever they want from it, but that's probably for another day. Okay, professional wargaming means in this case, and I'll let you read that. There's nothing more irritating than somebody just reading the slides, but, you know, we can all read English, I think. Now, I took that from the IDF Dictionary of Military Terms. The IDF Dictionary of Military Terms was not written in English, it was written in Hebrew, and there is some debate as to whether whether some of those terms translate directly. The reason I chose that was because I'm Israeli. You can all tell by the way I'm speaking, the way I'm dressed, I'm clearly Israeli. I could be standing here in a tennis shirt, a pair of jeans, and some flip-flops, but I decided not to. And that, for me, is my comfort zone in wargaming. That's where I come to about wargaming. A lot of you will have a very different opinion about wargaming. A lot of you will see that as not being fit for purpose. However, this is my start point. So this is where I'm coming from. If you think differently, well, it's a free country. Results will potentially impact large budgets and people's lives, so being wrong matters. I have quite a cold-blooded view of wargaming. Not that, you know, you can't stand up in the middle of a war game and go, people are dying out there, you're clearly getting too excited and you miss the point. The real issue is that if you are going to spend a lot of money, and I've worked on capability red teaming, and you sometimes have to defend equipment buys that the British Army has made, or you've worked on projects where those equipment buys are particularly prominent, and you think to yourself, I would love to see the war game that said this was a good idea, or I would love to see the war game that said this was the way ahead. And if you suddenly end up spending 245 million based on a not good war game, or, you know, pick a random number, if you end up buying aircraft carriers based on a war game, and I'm not saying they were, then, you know, clearly you have to be able to defend that. And saying, but the war game said, is not a good start point. And I think we can all agree on that. So far, I don't think I'm saying anything that anybody would really disagree with. Now, this is what I believe about good wargaming. It's a human activity requiring skilled execution, deep knowledge, plus a relevant understanding and experience. If you want to do this professionally, this is not something you can just come at with out of the blue. There has to be some understanding, and if you're talking to a professional audience, you have to be able to engage with that professional audience so as they have some faith in what that you know what you're talking about and you're approaching the subject matter in the right way. The only reason I bring that up is because if you get into very abstract elements of wargaming or some of the things that attach to war games, it's very easy, and I've seen it happen, where the customer is rapidly losing faith in the person talking to them because it's not just to do with the subject matter that's being concerned. It has a great deal to do with how that subject matter is being fed into something as complicated as a war game. So skilled execution and knowledge is required. Now, a lot of people might think I'm having a pop at wargaming. I'm not. I actually believe wargaming is essential. I cannot conceive of how any serious military professional starts their day within any aspect of force development or capability development without saying, where is the wargaming, where is the wargaming opportunity here? And I don't mean the wargaming opportunity as in I want to do a war game. What can I validate and verify? What can I get greater insight from? What can I get a level of comfort from by using wargaming before I have to go out and get real troops, burn real training time, and pull officers away from their desks and email for 2 weeks at a time and send them to Battus? So, well-executed war games have delivered significant petty advantage in numerous conflicts. True. And there is no greater testament to that, in my view, than I am the only Israeli here, aren't I? There's no other Israelis. Okay, it's kind of weird there isn't another Israeli here because wargaming is massive in Israel. The only problem is, like a lot of things in Israel, is nobody talks about it. So, you know, even battalion and battlegroup tactics in Israel is a classified document, lives in the safe with the company commander. Good thing about that is it means you have super simple stuff because no one ever gets to see it, you get told it once and you have to remember. But wargaming is massive there, it is widely used, it isn't widely talked about. And I've lived there a decade and over a decade, and I've spent most of my time talking to military professionals. And the amount of conversations I've had endless conversations about armoured fighting vehicle design. The number of conversations I've had about talking about the intricacies of wargaming and how you do various things, very much less. Good war games can and have saved money, so trained and educated soldiers, blindingly obvious. But not all war games are good. And this is my primary concern. If you eulogise about wargaming and you say wargaming's great and everybody runs around waving a flag for wargaming, then something is going to get overlooked. And the overlooked bit is going to be the wargames processes and everything else that are not fit for purpose. And wargaming becomes a badge because we all like narratives rather than we like data. So wargaming becomes a badge because people wanted to be associated with wargaming, because wargaming's a hot topic. People like the idea of wargaming. And the fact that there's a great steaming error lying in a war game just gets glossed over. And I get really concerned when people send me stuff off or I'm reading on the internet and someone says, the next battle in the future is going to look like this because we did a war game. Well, all that means is the war game gave you an output and you've chosen to interpret and write about that output in a certain way. But the level of confidence and evidence about that might be incredibly slim. That is just an example. That is not saying it's a trend or anything like that. Now, I'm going to put the next couple of points up like that, so as you get to read them. When I say no, notice there's a slash and then it says very little. So I'm not saying these things don't exist. I'm saying I've looked long and hard over a number of years and I have not found very much material in this area. So if you've written a book that covers these points and I haven't read it, then all that means is I haven't read that book, or that book's not particularly prominent, or lots of the wargamers I have talked to haven't pointed me at that book. Because I'm known to a couple of people in this room. This is my first time I'm turning up connections. Most of you have never seen me before. Lucky for you. However, I'm not completely new to wargaming. So what I find is there's lots of opinions, anecdotes, beliefs, plays, claimed experience that don't answer those concerns. A classic one is, we did this war game and the commanding officer of, you know, one load just thought it was really good. Not evidence. The fact that a bunch of soldiers thought a wargaming was really good or really informative doesn't show you that wargaming is actually doing the thing it says it should do. It's just someone expressing, and any time we start getting subjective opinions, then you need to almost take every single one of those subjective opinions and burrow down hard deep into that subjective opinion, because any opinion is a product of a particular personality of a person, and not all opinions are the same. Strangely. So the off-the-shelf problem is always the same. High levels of abstraction. I have a real problem with hex games. I know a lot of people here like hex games, looking at the front row, for instance, and a lot of people advocate for hex games. I have a bee in my bonnet about hex games, and I'll probably just have to get over it. But if anybody wants to buy me a drink and let me bore them for 3.5 hours wide, I'll have a crack at it. single player level of command issues, nobody ever gets lost in a war game, nobody ever decides that they're not going to do something, nobody ever pulls a Pienaar and decides that they're not going to lead their brigade into contact, they're going to lead their brigade off somewhere else. So you don't get those human friction levels, and I mean, that, I have yet to see a COTS-MOTS war game that will do that. I've even actually yet to see a professional war game that will bring that into sharp relief. Black box, AI simulations, I won't bang on about that because that's been talked about enough, but I'm familiar with them, and when I say AI, I just mean a single player game that you're playing on a computer where you're playing an entity that can be gamed. And you can unpack black boxes, we all know how to do it. You might not be able to see the code, but you will be able to see the trends generated by the computer player, and it's simple enough. Real world experience may not confer an advantage, and that's what I really worry about. I really worry about if you as a soldier come to play a war game and someone has to teach you about playing the war game, or you don't automatically know how to give orders and revert to your training and your comfort zone, then there may be a massive problem. In other words, if you have a one star with his eyebrows disappearing up through the top of his scalp because he has not the faintest idea what the war games are talking about, then I think you've missed a serious part of your audience. Why? I think how, why, what, where, how, why, what, when, and where, what conditions combat takes place is because combat resolution model may not be as important as people think. In other words, what I'm saying is there, those are the questions I really want to answer. So, witness Waterloo, 1815. I'm not really worried about what Napoleon's doing to Wellington. What I'm really interested in is there's 50,000 Prussians crashing into someone's deep flank halfway through the afternoon. Combat resolution modelling is, if you could put it this way, if you can consistently throw companies against platoons and you can consistently throw battle groups against subunits, then you're probably doing something right. The outcome of the actual firefight is something that can be debated upon, and it's probably, you're just as safe using human judgment as you are a couple of dice rolls or a combat resolution table. The consequences of the decision is probably more important than the consequences of combat. You can all argue about the consequences of combat, but decisions are probably greatly more important, and how those decisions get made and what influences those decisions, and doing a forensic deep dive on why that man made that decision or why that went that particular way. Not the, well, that's it, the game's over, wrap it all up, and let's all adjourn to the bar. Decisions need to be examined and they need to be talked about. Real world military training, skill and experience should count. And if it doesn't, you've got a problem. If you are a one star and you have been trained for 20 odd years and then you get your bottom handed to you by a 17 year old Finnish kid living in his mum's basement, doesn't have to live in his mum's basement, doesn't matter, you get beaten by someone who has absolutely no military background at all, then there is a problem. It might be a problem that your one star is not very well trained. Regardless, there is a problem. So there's fairly simple. That's my belief. You use the real information, you use real maps, real large areas of terrain, you use real data, staff procedures, you use real people using their training, you use detailed tracking of logistics. That is my opinion. I'm not going to defend it right now. You use multiple iterations of multiple games, not just the result of one game. That's all fairly obvious. In conclusion, wargaming only works when it's done and done well. You're really going to love this one. The greatest threat to effective and good wargaming is probably wargamers. Needless, ill-thought-out advocacy or trying to defend things about wargaming that wargaming really can't do, or overselling wargaming, will erode wargaming's efficacy with the intended audience. If you can't spot the bad, you cannot recognise the good. So you need to have a debate about what is good and what is bad. See you outside.